Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Groot Nibblink. I'm the creator of Apples and Genos, originator of the Zero-G Draft Strategy, and in this podcast, I'm going to go over the most puzzling players league-wide as submitted by the Apples and Genos Discord server. Let's get it. Well, hello, hello, everyone. We got Drewski in the chat already. What is up? We're running this live. We're running another episode of Puzzling Players. Apologies to those who looked for this last week. I was unfortunately at the last second traveling for work. Real life getting in the way of fantasy hockey. You hate to see it, but such is life. Lost ones in here as well. Best part about my league starting playoffs next week is that I still get to listen to this pod. What's up, Goat? I appreciate it. That's kind reviews, to say the very least. Well, let's not waste much time. There was one, actually, that was relevant. One player submitted that's relevant for tonight yet, with games starting at 8:30. So I wanted to touch on that one first. I'm going to scroll down. Talk about Connor McMichael for a second. Connor McMichael is of interest because basically and solely because he's been getting some exposure to the one and only Alex Ovechkin at even strength. They're running the same lines, it looks like. Ovechkin, McMichael, Oshie, and Miroshnichenko, Strome, and Wilson as the second line there. So, yeah. It's a good spot for McMichael for sure. He's been averaging, as you can see, 18 and a half minutes a night the last five games. That's a good number. We like to see that in terms of fantasy potential. And he's got a couple goals, 3 points in his last five to boot. Not on the top power play, but he is kind of replacing Hendrix Lapierre there. So they are kind of being the odd men out and everybody else just kind of stays on the ice. The underlying metrics are not that great. 213 shots per 60, 263 individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 374 Corsi, 4 per 60, 330 on ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. On the season, not a whole heck of a lot better, although he does have a 69% IPP, which is pretty nice. So overall, am I excited about McMichael? No. Do I think that McMichael is worth streaming this week in a week in which it's pretty tough to actually find some decent streamers? Yes. Yeah, I do think you can stream Connor McMichael in a lot of spots this week. Honestly, like, what better are you going to do? Are you going to have a guy who's going to play like one game for you this week and otherwise he's just going to be on your bench? That's not going to help you out all that much. So I would consider picking up Connor McMichael just for the sheer fact that he's actually going to play games for you. James in the chat, on vacation. Finally, I can watch a pod. Good stuff. I'm glad to have you. All right, I'm going to get into the list proper, starting from the most requested player in the Apples and Geos Discord server, and that was Andrei Svechnikov. Now, Svechnikov does have 5 points his last five games, including a couple goals, just under 17 minutes a night in that stretch. 78 shots per 60, 136 individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. Maybe not amazing, but definitely not terrible. 19th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 84th in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. Both numbers pretty indicative of anybody in Carolina in the top six. On the season now, pacing for 30 goals, 79 points. Pretty solid stuff. That Corsi 4 rank on the season, 10th in the league in Corsi 4 per 60, is pretty impressive stuff from Svechnikov, even given the fact that Carolina is a Corsi 4 machine in and of itself. You know, the shooting percentage is probably a bit on the higher side, the on-ice shooting percentage probably a bit on the higher side for what Svechnikov has typically seen throughout his career. But yeah, it's been nearly a point-per-game season for Svechnikov, and he's been really, really valuable, especially in Bangers Cats, where you're getting that extra value out of all of Svechnikov's peripherals, all that hitting that he does. Obviously very valuable there. Do I think it's going to continue at this pace? My bet would be that it would be slightly below this pace, but I mean, at this point in the season, I don't think you're doing anything different with Svechnikov. I don't think that you're going to just go out and drop him anytime soon. You know, Carolina's got a decent schedule this week. They got four games, so that's going to be helpful for your squad. And then next week, let's take a look into next week and see what we got there. We got Carolina with three games, zero off nights. That's like 65 or 70% of the league is on that schedule next week. So that's not actually much to write home about. Yeah, I think Svechnikov is just a guy that you're playing week in and week out pretty much from now until the end of the season. All right, next up, let's get through some of these comments. We got Toronto Dave in here. Good to see you, buddy. I'm dropping that hashtag zero G as per usual. GG, praise be to the Nate the Great, who is never late with giving the fantasy hockey fans their eventual fate. Ah, wow. I never knew when I started giving Blake these little rhymes that it would be turned around on me. It feels pretty good. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to have to tell Blake. He's got to start doing this for me. It feels pretty good. Full Tilt Fantasy Football. Tell me why Toronto won't suck this year, Nate. I can't tell you that. Decades of experience as a Leafs fan at this point has taught me that if there is any reason to believe in the Leafs, you should disbelieve that reason, because they are always going to suck in the playoffs. GG says, anyways, can I drop Elias Lindholm or what? I don't think you can. Honestly, I saw a tweet. Yeah, there it is. Batch Hockey, at Batch Hockey, Brendan Batchelor. Elias Lindholm back on Power Play 1 at practice today for the Canucks. Yeah, you got to hang on to somebody on the top power play in Vancouver. And I think that's pretty much it, to be honest with you. I think you just got to hang on. So that's my take on Lindholm at the moment. I know it's been tough. I know the metrics aren't even there, but yeah, just the fact that we have this long-term sample with Elias Lindholm of him being very good, and that power play obviously being a terrific spot to be, I just can't get behind dropping a guy like that, especially when next week Vancouver has just a terrific schedule. Well, it's not even that great, but relative to the rest of the league, it's pretty awesome. So that's what I think about Elias Lindholm. Full Tilt sadness. Yeah. Yeah, that is the Toronto fans' life, is sadness. All right. Now that we've gone down the rabbit hole there, let's get back into this. So some people wanted to have me chat a little bit about the Seattle tandem here. You know, Grubauer versus Decord. The question asked was who gets the majority of the starts in Seattle, which is obviously the question on everybody's mind, because it is like a decently valuable place to check out some fantasy zero G goodness, I guess I would say. Right now, it looks like they're doing a little bit of a every other. There was that stretch where Grubauer randomly started four straight. Maybe that was just a stretch where they wanted Decord to, you know, get some time off. They thought he needed a little bit of reset. And so they had Grubauer start four straight. He was terrific. Then Grubauer came back in for two games. And then they went back, Decord came back in for two games. Back to Grubauer, Decord, Grubauer. And tonight it's going to be Decord again. So it has been kind of every other the last five outings here. So that is kind of my take on how it's going to go. I really do think that they're going to be fairly content to just kind of run both these guys out, get them both plenty of games here towards the end of the season. I just don't know if they have much motivation to be doing much else at this point, unless one of them truly starts to just, you know, throw games and is truly terrible again, which can definitely happen. We've definitely seen that from Philip Grubauer, but they're well out of a playoff spot, so I don't really think that they're really gunning for anything. They just want to let both of these guys get a decent amount of games. They don't want anybody to get injured, probably. Just ride out the rest of the season and get a good sample size on both these guys. So I think they'll let both alternate unless somebody truly tanks. And that's honestly the best that I can give you. I wish I could do more, but I really think that it's just that simple. They're just going to go back and forth until somebody, you know, gives up the ghost, and then that'll be that. All right, let's move along. Quinton Byfield, just two assists his last five, really kind of threw a wrench into my plans with the head-to-head streamer deathmatch against Blake this past week. But I do love me some Quentin Byfield, so I'll forgive him. 211th in shots per 60 and 282nd individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 201 Corsi 4 per 60, 293 scoring chances 4 per 60, averaging over 18 minutes a game, but that has decreased a little bit across the last few games, if I'm recalling correctly. Yeah, he's gone from 1801, 1829, 2128, then 1755, and down to 1545 in the last game, which ironically, he had four shots and five hits in. It was probably his best overall performance outside of the stat sheet, anyway, in any of those five games. So, my overall take with Byfield at the moment is that pretty solid player, still a young player. I don't really know that he's going to command the same kind of top line minutes that he had been getting. I wonder if they've decided that that experiment went a little too far and now they're going to ease him back down on the minutes. That would be not an unforeseen thing to happen at this point, in my opinion. So I do think that it's possible that Quentin Byfield drops some in his fantasy value from here on out. I have Byfield in one spot. It's 14-team league, so I'm not really looking to move off him, but I am watching pretty closely at this point to see what the deployment is. He has gone through some stretches like this, and most of the LA players, quite honestly, have, where it's just been up and down a little bit all season long. And so I'm a little bit of the mind that he could just be going through a cold stretch, and we could have a hot stretch following it up right after, and that wouldn't be too surprising. Overall in the season, pacing for 24 goals, 62 points. If you pace it out to 82 games, that feels pretty accurate to me, honestly, for where Byfield's at this season. Do think he's got a lot of potential, and I'll be very interested in him for next season, especially if they end up giving him even more of a role and actually letting him be one of the bigger parts of this offense. Yeah, I do think that there's an untapped ceiling here for Quentin Byfield. We could be looking at a point per game plus player in the not so distant future. But for this year, I think that there's an equal chance that Byfield rebounds, which is why I'm personally holding on in a spot where I can afford to do so. I have a buy in that league for the playoffs this week. And if you can't afford to hang on to Byfield, if you're looking for somebody to drop and he is at the bottom, I don't think it's the worst thing to move on from Byfield at this point. Overall, it's unlikely that he absolutely just goes off and drops, like, I don't know, 7 points in his next five games. That feels pretty unlikely at this point. Reasonably, you're more looking at like 4 points in his next five games stretch, and you'd be reasonably happy with that. So that's what I think is the most likely scenarios playing out for Quentin Byfield. Josh in the chat, hi there, top two in my league heading into week 23. Yahoo playoffs start week 24, and he has a bye. So week 25, April 1st. Should I wait for future episodes, or should I start planning now? Yeah, if you've got everything locked down and there's no advantage to really doing anything in terms of this week, then absolutely you should start looking at what you can do to just make your team all the better for weeks 25 and 26. So definitely check out, if you haven't already, you should jump in the Apples and Geos Discord server, cheap plug there, and check out the playoff primer that I've put up there. It's got, you know, all the teams with the best off nights, the most amount of games played through weeks 25 and 26 on one sheet there. You should check that out. And also something that you should be doing at this point, especially when there's a lot of teams just vying to make the playoffs. Next week, there'll be teams, you know, trying to stay alive in the playoffs. What you should be doing through those couple of weeks is really just watching the waiver wire carefully to see who might be dropping basically star players just in an attempt to get more games played. So definitely be on the watch for that. If there are players out there, especially players with that great schedule for you in weeks 25 and 26, then those are the players you should be pouncing on as a person who doesn't really need to worry about the outcome of this week and has a bye next week. All right, let's keep rolling. Jack Hughes has no goals, just three assists in his last five games. That's obviously pretty unusual for a guy of Jack Hughes' talents. It's actually a six-game goalless streak for Jack Hughes at this point. He's been getting his regular complement of minutes, over 21.5 minutes a night. The shots have disappeared, which is really interesting. Well, I don't know if interesting is the right word, probably concerning for Jack Hughes managers, but 264th shots per 60, 241st individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, even the on-ice number is not that great, 155th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 144th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. I mean, it's all conjecture, but you wonder if the Devils selling off on Tyler Toffoli has made the team a little less motivated at this point. Jack Hughes might be one of them who might be feeling a little less motivated at this point in the season. That's conjecture. I don't know how much I even buy in my own narrative there, but it is concerning for a guy who, I mean, you can see on the season, 7th in shots per 60, 15th individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 8th and 9th in Corsi 4 and scoring chances 4 per 60 respectively. Absolute star all season long. Jack Hughes has been on pace for 99 points if he was playing a full 82. Yeah, overall, I mean, I don't see what you're doing with Jack Hughes, right? Like, even in this terrible stretch, he still has 3 assists. He's still out there all the time. He's not absolutely sinking you. Are you upset that he's not giving you, you know, like 3 goals every 5 games the way you're hoping for? Yes. But realistically, I don't think there's anything to do with Jack Hughes other than kind of grin and bear it through the stretch and hope that he gets better. If this continues on, I mean, you could say that there's an underlying injury at work here, and that would perhaps explain the drop in the shot production, the chance production. Perhaps that's the case, but also then why are they playing him 21 and a half minutes a night in a scenario in which they've already been selling off and they're clearly out of the playoff race? Yeah, all that to say, I think that Jack Hughes is just somebody that you're going to start rest of season, and you're going to just kind of grin and bear it, and hopefully he gets back to his scoring ways. Next up, Evander Kane. He's been a constant on here. 2 assists in his last 5 games, which is obviously not what we want to see for fantasy purposes. Edmonton is one of those teams that does have a pretty solid, playoff schedule, especially in the later weeks here upcoming. If you get beyond the week 23 here, well, honestly, even in this week, it's not that bad. But really, once you get into week 24 and beyond, Edmonton has one of the best schedules, bar none, in the fantasy playoffs. So Evander Kane holds some value just for that reason alone. And then obviously, if he can get attached to Draisaitl, McDavid are the two guys that you're hoping to get attached to. Last game, his most common line mates were Adam Henrique and Connor Brown. That's obviously not good. That line was atrocious, got absolutely caved in all facets. I can't imagine that they're really going to stick with that moving forward, but I mean, we've seen some crazier things. Overall, like, the shots are down, but the individual scoring chances for are still pretty decent. The on-ice numbers are not great, but that can be probably attributed to the line mates being a little bit subpar. If you can afford to hang on to Evander Kane in any capacity, I would definitely be trying to do so, especially if your playoffs are weeks 24 through 26, where Edmonton really does have one of the best schedules, if not the best schedule for fantasy purposes. Overall, I would say it is the best schedule, quite honestly. They've got the most games played and the second most off nights from weeks 24 through 26. And in the finals weeks 25 and 26, they've got 10 games played. No other team has more than 9. And they have 8 off nights. Only Vegas also has 8 off nights. So Evander Kane makes a lot of sense just for that reason. I think if you drop him, he kind of immediately becomes the best waiver wire pickup for anybody else out there. So in that vein, I think that Evander Kane, unintentional rhyming, we'd love to see it. Evander Kane is pretty much just a guy that you're going to ride with unless you absolutely have to drop him. Like, you've got to make room on your roster. You're not going to be starting him this week, and you got to make the playoffs this week, or you got to win this week because you're in the playoffs. If that's your case, then I can see it. But overall, I don't think that it's something I'm trying to do. All right, back to the comments. Jordan Wong, hey Nate, for Tuesday, I can only start one of Kyrou versus Colorado, Jarvis versus the Islanders, and Lekkonen versus St. Louis. Who would you start? And gives the point system there. Basically, pretty standard stuff, but hits and blocks, the bangers categories, just a little bit of a lighter weighting, I would say, overall, but pretty standard stuff overall for a point system. Kyrou versus Colorado, Jarvis versus the Islanders, Lekkonen versus versus St. Louis. That is pretty tough. Kyrou's obviously not playing terrific at the moment. I do think I like Seth Jarvis versus the Islanders. I don't mind that much. Jarvis does have 5 points his last 5 games. Underlying metrics are not terrific, but also, I mean, it's still Carolina, it's still Seth Jarvis. Lehkonen obviously doing some good things, getting some great deployment. It's hard to go away from Lehkonen, just given the deployment at this point. Just going to double check and make sure that we haven't seen any new lines coming out. I can't expect that that will be the case. I don't see any new lines. So I think I would go with Lehkonen there. It's hard to bet against that line at the moment, the way they're rolling. I do kind of like Jarvis as well. I think I would just go away from Kyrou just because he's cold, quite honestly, at this point. So I think it's Lehkonen for me. Also, Jordan asks, who would you drop first if I wanted to open up an additional streaming spot? That's obviously a little bit tougher. You got to look ahead to the rest of your, yeah, more than just this week. You got to look ahead to the rest of your playoffs or anything beyond that. I mean, you got to win this week, right? If you got to win this week, you got to make sure you take care of business this week and worry about the rest later. Overall, that is pretty tough. I think Kyrou is the drop there for me, but it is very, very close. I think all three of these guys are in a tier, which makes it a good question. Josh Meyer, do I hang on to Hagel? I actually was giving some advice to somebody earlier today, and Hagel is a person I mentioned as a potential drop. You have Duclair, who's come in there and has, yeah, had a pretty solid start and has found his way into some pretty solid playing time as well. And that's obviously going to be a problem for a guy like Brandon Hagel. Hagel now on the second line with Cirelli and Stamkos, while Duclair riding shotgun with Kucherov and Point. And Duclair also found his way up onto the top power play, and Hagel languishing on the second power play. So that's an interesting spot to be in for sure with Hagel. I do think that Hagel is a guy who's a little bit more dependent on his line mates than we like to think. He's definitely been boosted by Kucherov and Point this year. Kucherov, obviously, in particular, with just how incredible he's been. I think you can drop Hagel. One other point to note here in next week, like Tampa Bay this week has 4 games played, so if that factors in for you, then maybe you want to hang on to them. They are all on heavy nights this week, so maybe you're already trying to find somebody to drop for all those nights. Maybe that's your case. If that is the case, then definitely Hagel becomes a drop if he's a guy that you're not even going to be playing. But that being said, Tampa Bay plays San Jose this week. They play the Ducks this week, so they've got some juicy opponents that you think they could probably put up some goals against. But next week, Tampa Bay only has 2 games played in week 24, so that is a problem for sure, and that is where I'd be definitely okay with dropping Brandon Hagel, especially if this deployment continues. Overall, it depends on whether Hagel is factoring into your starting lineup. If you have somebody who's in a similar tier to him for this week that you can start in his place every time he'd start, and you're looking ahead to next week and you're like, man, I'm not even going to start this guy next week, he's only going to get me 2 games, maybe even only 1 game. I think they have 1 off night in those 2 games. Then definitely I think it could be a good time to move off of Hagel and find a good streamer. FF Tyler O, I think I know where this is going. Thoughts on Kirk Mulpey? Feel like his ice time can only go up. Sneaky sleeper. Yes, Mulpey was one of those guys back in the day. I think you're aging yourself a little bit here, Tyler, but yes, I do think he was a sneaky sleeper once upon a time. All right, I'm a 2020 president candidate, says it'll be interesting to see where Lindholm falls in the draft next year if he continues his current performances. Yeah, for sure. It will be interesting. There's still some season left here, though, and some offseason as well. So I think there's a lot to be written in that story yet, and I wouldn't dare to really say exactly how that's going to play out just yet. Big Chillin' Podcast says, what's happening with Vince Dunn? Yeah, I don't know if there's been anything new today. I didn't see anything, but that doesn't always mean that there hasn't been a new update. All I see is that there's no change in Vince Dunn and Jaden Schwartz's status. It looks like he is just Day to day, week to week, whatever you want to call it. He's not playing. He was skating in the practice yesterday, so that's obviously a good sign. But yeah, so hopefully soon is all that we can really say. It is unfortunate, especially with Seattle having such a great streaming schedule this week. All right, let's get back into the list. Thomas Harley was requested. He's got 3 points his last five games, 21 minutes a night, 50th amongst defensemen in shots per 60, 10th in individual scoring chances for per 60. On-ice numbers are pretty solid, but not spectacular. 35th Corsi for per 60, 41st scoring chances for per 60. On the season now, pacing for 19 goals, 47 points. Harley has really been quite a find this year, and I'm pretty excited about his future. But obviously, he's got a big old star defenseman in front of him named Miro Heiskanen, who just will take all of that power play time that we so desperately want a guy like Harley to get if you got him on your roster. I think that Harley is good for this week. I think that the schedule kind of dictates that you're hanging on to Harley for sure this week. I don't know who you're going to find who's better than Thomas Harley out on your waiver wire on defense, especially this time of year. If Harley is like your fifth defenseman and you're dropping for, a forward stream, like if Dylan Strome was out there and you're dropping Thomas Harley to get Dylan Strome in, then maybe that makes a little bit more sense if Strome was going to play all four games for you this week on the off nights. That would make a little bit more sense to me, but realistically, I think that Harley is a guy that you're probably just gonna want to hang on to. He's just been performing really, really well, and you get a couple off nights this week, and also on the Sunday, which is the lightest of the heavy nights this week, is his third game, so you might be able to get that one in as well. I just don't see a compelling reason to move off of Harley unless he is your fifth defenseman and you have a really compelling streaming option this week. Next up, Brandon Montour. Just two assists the last five for Montour. He had a hot streak and now he's back to a cold streak, I guess. I mean, two assists is still something. It's not great, but it's something. Over 23 minutes a night still. Still 10th amongst defensemen, shots per 60, 35th individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. On ice numbers really good. 13th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 16th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. On the season now, pacing for 10 goals, 43 points. Honestly, I have no interest in dropping or moving off of Brandon Montour anytime soon. The underlying metrics suggest he's a stud. The Panthers are playing him like he's a stud. The Panthers usually score a lot of goals, and ergo facto, I am keeping Brandon Montour on my rosters and playing him with confidence every single night. Yes, it's been a weird year where he hasn't had a lot of puck luck. We can check out the puck luck. 34% IPP, a guy of Montour's caliber should be in the mid to high 40s, in my opinion. So that's an extra 10 to 15% that he's just missing off the top of his point production. 4.4% shooting percentage is low for him. Even in the year, even prior to his breakout, that's a low number. 10.1% on ice shooting percentage, also low for a guy at top defenseman on a team like the Panthers. Dirty Deed in the chat. Raquel's deployment and time on ice are seriously concerning. Have a bye week. Was thinking about dropping him before next week for the semis. Nicholas Roy is on the wire. Pick up or wait for potential drops. I mean, if this is your only ad left for the week, then I might wait. But if this is a case where it's your first ad of the week and you're looking at setting up for next week, Vegas does have that Monday, Tuesday back-to-back to start the week next week if you can fit somebody in for both of those. It's a cheap way to get a little bit ahead in a week that will be very, very tough for streaming. And so I don't hate it. Maybe there's somebody else on Vegas that I might like a little bit more than Nicholas Roy. He is playing, with Stevenson and Mantha, which is okay, I guess. There might quite honestly not be anybody better. If you're talking about why, he probably is the best player from Vegas that you can find. So I don't hate it. I think Raquel was requested actually to come up later. So I can talk about Raquel here. He's got just one goal in his last five games, 12 and a half minutes time on ice in that range. Still pumping shots, 66 shots per 60, 66 Corsi for per 60. not terrible. Individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 are another story at 213th over the last five games. On the season, Raquel is just a 15-goal, 42-point pace in his 55 games played. It does seem like they may have just kind of soured on Raquel a little bit. He's playing with Malkin and Bunting on the second line. Realistically, the only time you're excited about a player not named Sidney Crosby in Pittsburgh right now is if they're playing with Sidney Crosby and Raquel is not at on the power play, or at even strength, Raquel is not. So I think that you can safely move on from Ricard Raquel. Nicolas Roy, it's a really tough streaming week. In some other weeks, you know, I might laugh at something like this, but in a week like next week where it's just such a brutal streaming schedule, I do think that a guy like Nicolas Roy, you're just going to roll the dice because the streaming is so bad that if you have the ads to use this week, you use them for that, and then you try to just pick up day by day, game by game, you know, goalie streams, whatever makes sense for your league. But that's pretty much how you're going to play it, in my opinion. Drewski asks, in a bye this week, next week, worth dropping Ingram and Faber to add in some more games in the beginning of the week. So Connor Ingram was actually the next player that we were going to talk about. And then Faber, if I remember correctly, I believe that Minnesota next week has only two games played. I'll fact check myself very briefly. Minnesota, where's Minnesota on the list? Why can't I find the Minnesota team? Oh, I moved myself too far away. That's what happened. I moved myself to the next sheet on zerogar.com. Here we are, Minnesota. They play San Jose and Vegas Thursday and Saturday in week 24 next week. So, yeah, I don't hate it. I don't think you have to hang on to Brock Faber. Blake talked in the podcast that just came out today. If you haven't had a chance to check that out, you should definitely go check that one out. He talked about dropping Faber basically just to get some games played. And I would definitely consider doing the same, especially if you've got five defensemen and you can go down to four defensemen by dropping Faber. I think that becomes a bit of a no-brainer, especially if you can get something like that Vegas stream, like that, I mean, the Boston stream, the Tuesday-Wednesday back-to-back to open the week is also an option. You got Buffalo with the Wednesday Friday off nights. You got Vancouver with the Monday and Sunday off nights, so you kind of have to hold through the whole week to get it and get the full benefit there. But to find something in a week that's just brutal in terms of off nights and finding anything to stream, I do think that you can move off of that. And then Connor Ingram, as I alluded to, we can talk through the Arizona situation at the moment. It's a bit up in the air for sure. You know, you've got a situation where, I mean, if you just look at the last two games, both identical 4-1 wins for the Arizona Coyotes. Both goalies played well. I think it's probably a situation right now in which they'll do some alternating until such a time as one or both of them blow up again, and then they might go with somebody else. Like Vejmelka got, what was it, a four-game stretch, then Ingram came in. Ingram was never truly bad. He had one bad game, I would say, one truly bad game against Chicago where he allowed six goals. I mean, he had 40 shots against in that game against Chicago. The Coyotes just literally didn't show up. Before that, he had a stretch where he allowed four goals, three goals, three goals, four goals. That's obviously not great, but I mean, it's not like atrocious. It's not like he was getting blown out every single game. Then he followed that up with the shutout, then had the six goals against game, then followed the next game up with only one goal against on 29 shots. And now you're in a situation where both goalies have won their last start, allowing only one goal. So I think that the most likely scenario in most of these cases nowadays, the new reality of the NHL is that in a lot of cases, unless somebody is clearly outplaying the other, they are going to split a lot of these games and just go, you get this start, next guy gets the next start, and you just go off on, off on, off on until such a time as somebody truly starts to outplay the other person. So I do think, you know, there might be some recency bias, not even recency bias, I guess that's the wrong term, but just with how well Ingram has played on the season as a whole, maybe if Ingram starts to roll and Vejmelka even has one bad start or two bad starts in a row, then Ingram can get some roll again. but that's pretty much just speculation on my part that they might slightly favor Connor Ingram moving forward. So overall, I think if you're looking ahead, you're looking at this week, it looks like if they did continue with a kind of on-off situation, then Ingram would get two starts this week, and then you would move into next week, and he would only get one start that week. So if that is true, if that's the case for Connor Ingram in week 24, when you really need to have him, then obviously I think he's not worth rostering. Maybe you want to take some time this week and see how this week plays out. If they do continue with that on-off situation, then maybe you feel a little bit more confident that they're going to continue with that into week 24, and that might give you the license to drop Connor Ingram. So maybe you want to check out what they do this week and just go from there. That might be some advice to take for this week. All right, Jer says, I know we aren't fans of Duchesne in these ends, but would you consider streaming him for the Dallas off nights this week? I'm on the fence between him and Harley. Matt Duchesne was also on the list. Honestly, Matt Duchesne, this is the best metrics run of his season. 19th in shots per 60, 7th individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 45th Corsi 4 per 60, and 27th on ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. I mean, this is as good as Matt Duchesne has played under the hood the entire season. So, I mean, definitely, I think anytime I see metrics like that, I'm interested in streaming someone. His line got the most even strength time on ice in the last game. He's obviously still on the second power play unit there. That's kind of what you expect with Duchesne, but he's still getting almost 17 minutes a night, which is pretty solid stuff. So definitely, I think Duchesne looks like a really solid streamer for this week. Big Chillin' Podcast, should I keep Kurashev 12-man Cats Keepers League? It would have to be a very, very deep keeper league for me to keep Philip Kurashev. That's all I'll say about that. Drewski, I have the most fab left. Should I spend all my dollars on Kopitar to add one game on Monday in week 24? It's an interesting point. I don't know that I'd spend all of it because you're betting... You're spending all of your fab just to bet on a singular game, right? That Kopitar comes out and crushes in that singular game. Might be interesting to see who they're actually playing. I don't know. They're playing Vancouver. You know, that might be a team that you don't expect them to score 7 against. Like, even if they have a good game, they might not get 7 against Vancouver. That is a tough spot to be in for sure. I'm trying to think what's the likelihood that somebody else gets dropped this week? Somebody's in a panic and you can get somebody dropped from a Vegas or dropped from another player dropped from LA or, you know, somebody from St. Louis that you might favor a little better. Those are the other teams playing on that Monday. I just feel like I feel like you should put a fab bid in. I think I would. I just don't know if it's worth all your fab to bet on one game of Kopitar when there's definitely going to be more interesting drops done this week and beyond. Big Chillin' Podcast said, my bad, man, rest of season for keeping Kurashev, LOL, not the keeper pick itself. Yeah, rest of season. The problem with Chicago is Chicago doesn't have a great schedule rest of season. And so you're probably going to be benching him in a lot of spots anyway. And so I just don't think this is a player that you really need to concern yourself with hanging on to. Like, he's all heavy nights this week, all heavy nights next week. Is Kurashev really making it into your lineup over other players? I don't know. So that is my take on Kurashev. We got to get back into the list here. John Gibson was requested with the full question being, why is John Gibson hot garbage? That seems a little aggressive, I'm not going to lie, with regards to John Gibson. To be honest with you, though, like, I kind of agree with the sentiment. I think John Gibson is kind of overrated, in my opinion. I think everyone has considered John Gibson to be just this terrific, just this absolutely irreproachable, terrific player who's just completely mired in a terrible situation. I mean, his last 4 years prior to this one, 904, 903, 904, 899. We've seen better seasons from other goalies, even in bad spots. And so I just kind of feel like if John Gibson was as terrific as he's been cracked up to be throughout most of his career, we probably just wouldn't have this bad of results, maybe. I mean, I could be wrong about that take. I'm not trying to turn into a goaltending soothsayer by any stretch, but overall, I kind of agree with the sentiment. I don't think John Gibson is anybody to write home about. He's also dealt with tons of injuries this year, and that's been tough to deal with as a fantasy manager. Yeah, I'm just not convinced that John Gibson is somebody you need to hang on to for any length of time. Timothy Liljegren is next up. He's got 4 points his last five games, and crucially, we got a bit of info in the on the Twitter machine here today. Jonas Siegel tweeted another change to power play one for the Leafs. Timothy Liljegren replaces Morgan Rielly as the lone defenseman. That's pretty interesting, obviously. Liljegren has flashed a little bit at times this year. Metrics as of late, not too bad. 33rd shots per 60, 102 in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. On ice numbers are better. 28th Corsi, 4 per 60, 19th on ice scoring chances, 4 per 60, skating just over 19 minutes a night, which is pretty much where he's lived all season. He's on pace for 5 goals, 35 points. I mean, this is probably the player that Liljegren is, but for any stretch where he's on that Leafs power play, which I believe is like second or third in the league at this point, yeah, I'm interested in Liljegren. You got to be at this point. He becomes a stream. You know, if you're looking at him versus, we could do the Cam York test that Blake and I talked about on the podcast yesterday. Cam York, I just have not a lot of faith in Philadelphia. I mean, I don't have a lot of faith that Liljegren will hang on to this deployment for all that long either, but in the short term, who would you rather have, Liljegren for as many games as he gets on the top power play in Toronto, or York for as many games as he might get on the top power play in Philly? I'll take Liljegren there. I'll take the Leafs power play, and it's not particularly close to me. All right. The Carolina tandem was requested, so we'll start with Kochetkov. Honestly, both of the Carolina goalies have played very, very well as of late. Kochetkov got into a little bit of a shootout there with the Leafs. He did allow 4 goals in the last game, but eventually he was able to shut the door late, and Carolina came back and won it. I mean, he saw 40 shots in the game, so it's not like it was his fault per se. Very uncharacteristic game for Carolina, who usually does a much better job at shutting down the opposition's shot attempts. The interesting factor here is that Frederik Andersen has played terrifically since he came back, but so far it's just been every other night, every other night, just alternating back to back these two. So overall, I don't really see a reason why that would change either, unless, again, one of these two really starts to run away with things and the other starts to lag behind, has back-to-back bad games or something like that. So overall, I think that's what you expect. So basically, you're just looking ahead and kind of projecting, you know, if it is every other game, then it stands to reason that Kochetkov would get the start on Tuesday against the Islanders, so you can watch for that. If he doesn't get that, then that would be a concerning sign to me. That would be the first time that we've seen Frederik Andersen take back-to-back starts. So that would be a concerning sign. But if Kochetkov gets that, then you know for a fact that he's going to get one of the Thursday-Friday back-to-back games. They're not going to run out Andersen in a back-to-back situation this close to his return. Overall, I think Kochetkov is a good option for this week, and then you're looking ahead to next week, and you're just playing it honestly game by game, week by week at that point, kind of projecting out on an every other game basis. As long as this trend continues, who's going to play and when? I'll flip over because somebody did ask in the Discord about the Leafs tandem as well. You got Joseph Woll and you got Ilya Samsonov. Samsonov has played actually decently as of late, which is a new development, obviously. He had that just really well documented terrible stretch earlier in the season. Got a lot of hate from Leafs fans. In this last little stretch, he started 3 straight now for the Leafs. Does seem like they might be gearing up to make him the starter for the playoffs. But you know, Joseph Woll could easily take that back. I mean, if you have Woll on the roster right now, I definitely think you should drop him. Anytime I see an the other goaltender get 3 starts in a row, I'm absolutely dropping the guy. Wow, this is a tough sentence to get out. Whenever you see something like this, where Samsonov gets 3 starts in a row, you should be dropping his compadre there in Joseph Woll, in my opinion. There's no reason to hang on. I mean, maybe he gets a start now on Tuesday. You could hang on to him, get that start, and then move on. But overall, I think it's clear that the Leafs have favored Samsonov as of late. All right. Move over, we can talk about Aiden Hill. We got to talk about a lot of goalies in this puzzling players. Don't worry, they are puzzling to me as well. Aiden Hill, they've been running out there. He hasn't been performing as well of late. Had 5 goals against, 3, 3, 4, and 3. Not as good as he's been throughout much of the season. And then to complicate things, you got Logan Thompson coming in and registering 1 goal against in the win against New Jersey in their last game. Overall, I'm not that concerned on Hill yet. I'd like to see him bounce back, obviously, maybe in the next game here. If Thompson got the next game, then maybe there'd be a little bit more concern from my side. But overall, I'm not concerned on Aiden Hill yet. I'm watching much more closely now than I was before. I will say that for sure. But not concerned just yet on Aiden Hill. Next up, Daniil Mirimanov. We have to talk about this man because he's taking all of Rasmus Anderson's time on the power play. It's been an interesting stretch, I guess you could say. He's got 2 goals in his last 5 games here, playing over 20 and a half minutes a night. That's good. The 11th in the league in shots per 60. That's good for a defenseman for sure. Although I'm going to fact check myself on this one, but I believe he had 1 game where he got like all of those shots in 1 game. He had an 8-shot game. He has 2 0-shot games. I shouldn't fault him for that one, honestly. He's in the middle. He just started that game against Washington, so won't fault him for that. He's got 2 3-shot games, an 8-shot game, a 1-shot game, and a 0-shot game. That is all over the map. But overall, I mean, in the last game before tonight, we'll see how many minutes he gets in this game against Washington. That's ongoing right now. But in the last game, he got 22 minutes, 52 seconds. That's a nice number. Had a goal in that game. And yeah, he's been getting some time with the power play units, playing up on the top power play unit, getting more minutes than Uyghur and Anderson in that respect. I mean, he's definitely worth a stream if you're in a spot where you have injuries or something like that and you need to have just some extra defense bodies. This week is kind of weird for the Flames. They're playing right now and then they don't play again until Saturday, Sunday. So it's a weird one for the Flames, but if he plays well again tonight and you're looking at Saturday, Sunday, maybe you run into an injury to one of your 4 defensemen and you got an open spot on the Saturday, you could stream him in for that and then just kind of hang on to him as long as the injury persists. That could be a way to do it. I don't know if I'm like prioritizing Mirimanov over a lot of other players necessarily. I mean, I guess at this point I might take him over Rasmus Anderson just because he's getting that deployment. Calgary clearly not playing for anything other than just seeing what they have. So as long as Mirimanov is producing, I think he'll stay up there. So that is playing into things for him. But can I say that I'm honestly excited about it? Not too much. It's nice to see the shots being up there, but it's a very short stretch that we've seen so far. I'm definitely going to need to see more there. All right, we're getting to the end here. We already talked Woll. We already talked McMichael. Last on the list, Alexander Nylander. This one actually came over from Twitter. He's got 3 goals, 4 points his last 5 games. I talked about Nylander as the under-the-hood player to watch in the last podcast, the flagship podcast. So, again, check that out if you want even more of a take on Nylander. But as you can see, if you're watching here on YouTube right now, 9th shots per 66th, individual scoring chances 4 per 67th, Corsi 4 per 65th, on ice scoring chances 4 per 60, over 18 minutes a night. I mean, what's not to like about any of that at the moment? I don't know how much to trust it with Nylander, but I will say that this stretch has convinced me that he can be a valuable fantasy resource. Maybe he's one of these guys who doesn't necessarily just ascend to stardom from here on out, but maybe he is a guy who, if there are injuries ahead of him, he gets promoted up the lineup and he pops off for a little while somebody else is injured. I definitely think that's within the range of outcomes for a guy like Alex Nylander for the rest of his career. And who knows, maybe he's just that much of a late bloomer. He needed some confidence. He's watching his brother William tear things up and just getting a little bit of that brother syndrome, not being able to measure up until finally everything snapped into place in Columbus, of all places. Who knows? But I am definitely sitting up and paying attention to what Nylander has been able to do. The tough part with Nylander is that Columbus just has an absolutely atrocious schedule kind of moving forward here. This week they have one off night. They have three games Tuesday and Saturday, heavy nights, and the Friday off night. So maybe you can get him in for Friday. If you happen to have an empty spot on the Saturday, you could do a Friday-Saturday stream. But next week, again, there are three games, zero off nights. So unless he's definitively better than anybody else that you've got going on your team, I just don't know. I just don't know that Alex Nylander is really going to crack your roster. Like, it's going to be hard to trust Nylander game to game for sure. You're going to want to be checking those lines and making sure that he's still getting that same deployment, because things could go sideways for a player like this. We've seen at times throughout the season, right, just in Columbus alone with Pascal Vincent as the coach there, you've seen guys like Kirill Marchenko have terrific stretches and then go completely silent and gets moved down the lineup again. So, at the moment, I'm into it. The metrics say that he's actually producing at this level, that he's actually performing very well. And so I'm into that for sure. I just don't know how confident to be at this point. And that's got me a little leery. If he had a terrific schedule, then I'd be all over it at this point. Like, if he had, just trying to think, like, if he had Washington scheduled this week, or even, if you're thinking ahead to next week, if he had Buffalo or Vancouver scheduled next week, then it would be like, I'd be much more interested in Alex Nylander just to see about the possibility of him continuing this kind of pace. But with the schedule as it is, I just don't know if he's going to factor into your lineup enough for it to truly matter. All right, folks, I think that is it. I think we made it to the end. That is going to be all that we've got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value, helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, which is a terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for the podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. That's it, folks. Much love.